Okay. So, my name's Andrew Simmons, and I'm the Tech Chair of the Communication Law and Policy Society. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
I'm here with some speakers from our net neutrality panel, the first speaker of our Communications Law and Policy Symposium, Law Chasing Technology. If you guys would like to introduce yourselves.
Sure. I'm Russ Hanser. I'm a partner at Wilkinson Barker Knauer in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jill Canfield. I am the senior legal counsel for the National Telecommunications Cooperative Association, which is an association of rural independent telecommunications providers.
Sure. And thank you guys so much for being with us. For those of you that couldn't be there at home, it was an incredible panel, very lively. So I'll ask you first, what were you guys' thoughts on the panel? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was a good dialogue. We had different points of view represented. I think scratching the surface, at least, of the major issues, which is hard in an hour, and I hope we were able to provide some enlightenment to the students particularly, and I think it worked out well.
I agree. I think it was very good. It's a topic that sounds very easy to understand, but actually is not. There's a lot of details that once you actually get beyond the words free and open internet, create some controversy.
Right. Well, one thing that was touched on a lot during the panel that we might expand upon now is transparency and what you guys think about transparency. And I guess, you know, I think one thing to maybe start the conversation is how important is it to start to have that dialogue now?
I think it is important to have this dialogue. When you look at your telephone bill, you've got the truth in billing requirements, or the telephone companies are supposed to provide their telephone bills in a way that the consumer can understand them and know what it is they're paying for so that they can compare services. So I think it's a logical regulatory leap to go to a transparency idea for broadband internet access. And I don't know that anyone in the industry is opposed to transparency, but the question is, what does that mean?
Absolutely.
You have perhaps your public advocates who think it should be much more than what your industry people do. Our perspective is that it's an issue between the end user and its company. What does the company provide so that the end user knows what it is they're getting? And we think that they should provide enough information to be able to make an informed decision, but not so much information that it bogs it down.
Yeah, I'd say I agree. I think most people in the industry are all in favor of transparency, and the big questions are transparency that is enforced by the FCC or transparency that comes more organically from the industry and from the forces of competition. That's one big question. And then transparency for whom? So transparency has been, for a long time, a point that the technology industry and the folks I represent have advocated. In fact, the four internet policy principles arose from an earlier set of principles that was very similar but included an express transparency goal, which was not reflected in the internet policy statement. So I think the question is, the providers would all like to be transparent, and they all believe that the market is forcing them to be more and more transparent, and that markets run on good information, and they all recognize that. The concerns I think they have are that too much information has diminishing returns for users, but more importantly, given those diminishing returns, creates dangers for the users. So dangers for people who want to program viruses and other kinds of malware, people who want to otherwise exploit weaknesses in the network, and the providers are very much concerned about that. Those threats are constantly evolving, and therefore the responses need to evolve as well. And limits on disclosure and limits on what they can do shy of disclosure or prior to disclosure could, in their view, limit their ability to respond and keep the network safe.
You have new regulation imposes new cost, and when you're talking about something that's such slim margins to begin with, we're trying to get broadband out to the rest of the world, you're opposing any regulation, perhaps if the FCC were to go so far as to require these are the things you must disclose, or you must provide it via this technology, or you must have this upgrade in your system to provide the information. When you start getting there, you're actually in effect possibly hindering broadband deployment to the rest of the country because you're creating new cost, and that's a real danger.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you guys touched on an important point that we wanted to hit on here in the podcast, and that was the four internet net neutrality principles promulgated by the FCC. I know a lot of our listeners out there probably are wondering the degree to which they're to be taken seriously and the teeth that they're going to have now versus in the future, and perhaps your guys' thoughts on that.
At the time the internet policy statement was adopted, and I'll say I was working for one of the commissioners at the time, there were many explicit statements that they were not binding, that they were rather guides for how the commission would undertake further policy making. In the Comcast order, the commission purported to treat them as though they were binding, That decision right now is under consideration by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which is widely expected to say that they were not binding, although anything can happen. I think that some even proponents of net neutrality want that to happen because they believe it will put a premium on the adoption of rules or legislation if necessary. So I think the principles themselves actually have played a huge role in shaping conduct by providers and shaping expectations by consumers, and have really done a great job at shaping the market in a flexible, market-oriented way. I think they should be taken seriously, even though they might not be enforceable. Moving forward, my suspicion is they'll be supplanted by binding rules, which may be less useful for the market than is hoped.
And once you get into a situation where you have binding rules, too, they can't be, as the word was, nimble. Rules don't change quickly. They get challenged in court, first of all, which these most certainly will be,
sure.
I would predict, anyway. And the rulemaking process is not a quick little three-month process. I mean, you're talking, in some cases, we have rulemaking proceedings that's years, literally years and years and years before we get binding rules. Mm-hmm. So in a technology situation where the technology is moving so quickly, it's nearly impossible to have rules that will keep up.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to mention in closing, just take a little bit of a pop culture bend and get your guys' thoughts on it. I know something that's really near and dear, whether we want to talk about it or not, to my generation's thoughts on internet usage is illegal file sharing. And basically, my question to you is, it's so ubiquitous, seemingly, but it's still illegal. What are your thoughts on the contemporary internet generation being internet criminals or not? Is that the future of the internet? Legalization, not legalization?
I guess I'd say, and I'm not a copyright lawyer, I would say that this question, I think, ties into broader questions about the future of the media in an online world. So it's tied to questions about the decline of newspapers, the potential decline of paid content generally, and of sort of the idea of expertise and editorial power. So I don't know if this is a dodge, but I guess I'd say I think we need to move to a model where good content is paid for so that good content continues to be provided. That said, you know, there are debates about whether the precise bounds of the current copyright and intellectual property rules are too draconian. I can't speak to that. That may or may not be the case, but I think if we're going to have a future in which new content is created, not just mashups of old content, but new content is, or links to old content, but if new content is created, we need a system where people are compensated for that so they continue to do it.
I think that's right. I think this is an area where legislation just hasn't kept up with the technology, again, because it's not nimble. Legislation is probably worse than rulemaking. But it's something that our lawmakers are going to have. This is not an area for the FCC to regulate. The FCC should stay out of this, I believe. This is not the FCC's area of expertise. But we do need some new rules and laws that are not only protect the financial flow of money for the copyrights, but also maybe respond to the fact that the old model isn't going to work. And we need a new model. I don't know what the model is. I don't do copyright law. But there needs to be some sort of change that allows for the new media to fit into the copyright world.
Sure. Well, I guess that's the best way to leave a panel with unresolved questions for the next panel. Russell, Jill, I'd like to really thank you for being here. It was
thank
a pleasure
you.
To have
you.
And we hope to see you next year.
Thank you.
I hope so, too.